6 minutes past 12 midday. The Man in Light in session through to one. Our guest is the Treasury Minister, Alfred Cannon, MHK. You can text 166177, email studio at manxradio.com, or you can call 66 1368 to put a question directly to the Treasury Minister today. Well, the state of emergency is due to end on the 15th of May, a week on Friday. And, well, there is one big question at the back of all this. And good afternoon, it is to Alfred Cannon. Hello, Mr. Cannon.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Okay, so the big question, Mr. Cannon, is can we afford all this?
Well, as you know, I believe the government acted decisively when this crisis came about to put in place a number of schemes and support mechanisms to try and help as many people and as many businesses as possible get through this. Those schemes are well underway. We are expending significant sums of money to help people get through this situation. It is a difficult situation, but we appear to have some light at the end of the tunnel. I think the measures that we've taken have been successful, generally speaking, albeit I'm obviously very sad with what's happened at Abbotswood, and extend my sympathies to anybody who's been seriously affected health-wise as a result of this pandemic. But broadly speaking, the measures that we have taken have suppressed the virus. We're getting some sectors of the economy back to work. We have set out a program now through a medium-term strategy to get more people back to work, to resume some more normality. Now, and as we currently stand, you know, because of the strength of our economy, because of the strength of the reserves, and I'm confident that certainly in the short to medium term, we will get through this and we will put in place an economic strategy and a fiscal strategy which will enable the island to get through the next period of time beyond this phase, whenever this phase ends, certainly for the next 2 or 3 years. And yes, we will get through it, even though, as many of us would admit, it's going to get probably quite tough and quite choppy waters ahead of us.
Okay, Howard's with us on the line. Hello, Howard.
Well, Andy.
Howard,
good afternoon.
You're with the Treasury Minister.
Yeah, good afternoon, Minister.
Good afternoon, Howard.
And it's more a question, nothing appertaining to how they're doing the coronavirus, anything like that. But in lots of cases, we hear of monies that are going out to the community in because of the coronavirus coming from reserves. Then in another broadcast, you'll hear it's been taken from the pension fund. Is the pension fund and the reserves one and the same, or are they two separate entities? Because it's quite confusing, because, as I say, and it's done by the government, the money's coming from certain factors, but we're not sure which one.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Howard. Yes, I know the language can get confusing. Fundamentally, we are paying for this, proposing to pay from this, from the money that we have within the National Insurance Fund. So the National Insurance Fund is used on an annual basis to support Social Security, welfare and pension spending, and a small contribution is also paid towards the spending that goes on the island for our health services. So, but that is fundamentally where we will be digging into to support the expenditure that is currently unforecast and that we're needing to bring forward to support businesses and people.
But the question there, in a sense, was, now this insurance fund is to cover costs of insurance, etc., national insurance. Is there such a thing then, as we are often told, as a, well, just to quote a figure, $1.5 billion sitting in reserve like a Fort Knox within the Isle of Man structure? Is there a separate money battle there, that is money that's taken from the economy bit by bit and added to it to hold it back in reserve? Is that a separate fund?
So all our So we have all our funds set aside and listed in our accounts, Howard. They are the money is allocated from these funds for investment purposes, and yes, they are effectively separate funds when it comes to being examined for accountancy purposes. And so we do separate out the government finances and the National Insurance Fund, which is very much the crown jewel in amongst our reserves. Certainly before this crisis was a significant asset and will remain a significant asset for us. But there was enough money in that fund and is enough money in that fund for us to sustain the current expenditure levels. And what we will do at about the 6 month point is review where we are financially, and we will determine what adjustments may be needed to be made to any financial funding structures that we have. But it is a separate fund, but the money is being used at the moment. The cash that was cash availability in the National Insurance Fund is being used to support our spending.
Okay. Thanks, Howard.
Thanks, then. Bye now.
All right. Good to talk to you. Let's go to David, who's with us. Hello, David.
Hello. Hello, Minister.
Hi, David.
I would like to ask what your opinion is on there being no banks in the whole of the west of the island. Isle of Man Bank shut its doors, I think it was the 28th of March. And from my understanding, it's because of staff shortages, which appears to be that the bank has taken advantage of being able to lay staff off, furloughed, or whatever it is, to save themselves money, which is in turn disadvantages the old, the weak, and the vulnerable who rely on the bank.
Yeah, well, thank you, David. Obviously, we've seen a decline in the number of branches across the banking system over recent years, and of course, you know, a lot of this is driven by the transaction levels and just the number of people that are visiting the banks. We as a government have tried to provide as much support as possible and replaced, where feasible, some of these services via the post offices. But I don't think that's just a result of this pandemic. I think these plans have been going on for some considerable time. And I'm afraid it's a result, really, of today's lifestyles, the availability of technology, the availability of individuals to carry out their banking transactions now without having to leave their homes for the most part. And to a certain degree, obviously, you will recognize there has been some decline in the use of cash as more and more people have been able to use their cards just to pay simply by swiping or by using their PIN levels. I think we're conscious of the fact that we need to try and keep some cash facilities in the community. I think it's a matter that Tynwald's been debating now for some time. I think there's a connection here with our community services, how they are delivered. But of course, you know, it's not just banks these days where you can get cash. You know, pretty much you can walk into most shops and they'll give some sort of cashback facility. But I understand the concern, and it's something that we're going to have to continue to carefully look at as we look at the broader government plans and policies around supporting our communities, and in particular our probably more isolated communities where they have very little facilities.
Okay, David, thank you for that. Here's a text that came in, Minister, that's from John. In plain and simple language, explain why every small business that's been forced to close by the government is not eligible for a £3,000 grant from the government. That's from John.
Well, we have provided significant support to a huge amount of businesses across the community, as you know, Andy, in a significant number of ways, through business support, through the salary support scheme, and through the Social Security MIRA. Now, we have not given out £3,000 to every single business. We've defined the areas where we think those businesses have been most impacted. The biggest area of issue for us has been around single employee or owner-managed businesses. And the reason why there has been, in some cases, some difficulty is because we found those businesses have not, or the individuals concerned, have simply not been able to keep up to date with paying national insurance and statutory payments. What we have done is we have tried to make sure that that those businesses who haven't been able to access the £3,000 have been able to get into the wage support scheme where feasible. And indeed, over the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've been making considerable improvements to both the £3,000 scheme and the wage support scheme. And now, actually, the most recent move is to make a further discretionary support mechanism available for salary support. So anybody who hasn't been able to access the £3,000 because of their circumstances and the way they've structured their business should now be looking at the salary support scheme as the next alternative for them.
Okay, a note in that says, has the reporting of income and the need for NI and tax compliance exposed the grey economy? And did you know this would leave transgressors on the beach?
I think there's a huge number of issues that we are going to have to pick up after this, Andy. We already had a number of questions about the structure of government payments or payments to government, particularly and more specifically around how those payments were made to the National Insurance Fund and some of the complexities that have existed. I think absolutely this crisis has exposed a huge numbers, a huge number of flaws potentially in the system that we are operating. It's clearly not been operating on as a sort of fair and level playing field, and we are going to have to make some adjustments to that going forward. We'd already committed to a review of the National Insurance Fund in sort of October, November this year. It may well be that we bring that forward and try to level the balance in a more appropriate manner going forward.
Okay, we're with Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon on the Man in Line today, live through to one. A couple of questions, Minister, from our answer phone.
Hello, a message for Mr. Cannon, please. Could he, for the sake of one of the schemes on offer by the government, explain whether I'm employed or self-employed? I'm a construction worker, self-employed. I get paid through a limited company. Am I employed or self-employed for the purpose of a government assistance? Another question is, if I receive job seeker's allowance, it would be roughly £90 per week, £320 a month. If I live in the UK, pay the same tax, same national insurance, I would be eligible under the furlough scheme for £2,500. Does he think that's right and does he think that's fair? And please don't answer by saying the government can't afford it.
Hello. Is the business support grant of £3,000 likely to be reissued for businesses again? Because obviously £3,000 doesn't go a long way for some businesses. And if so, would that be automatically credited to those that have applied for it and received it already? Or would you have to reapply for it again if it's available?
Okay. Just a couple of questions, Mr. Cannon.
I think there's about three questions there, varying levels of complexity. I must be careful, Andy, because the answer of defining whether somebody is employed or self-employed needs a careful examination. But generally speaking, if you are taking a salary, a proper salary, and paying national insurance, full national insurance on that withdrawal and declaring that properly to the tax authorities, then you are effectively employed. If you are just taking dividends from your business and you are looking to avoid paying national insurance or reducing your national insurance payments, then it may well be that you are determined as being self-employed. So it really comes down to how the predominantly how you are paying yourself and, of course, the general contract of employment or relationship that you have with your business. So I'm afraid it is not a black and white answer on that perspective. In terms of the UK and their offer of the £2,500, what they've carried out they're undertaking in a different way in terms of trying to support employees during this period, and they're effectively paying that money for them to stay at home. What we did with our salary support scheme was try to give more flexibility and choice for both employers and employees by paying the £280 a week, and now so in total £1,120 a month may be being paid directly to an employee for staying at home, or it may be that they're still getting that salary support and the business is able to carry on working, albeit that the business claiming that money will be operating in significantly reduced income circumstances. So we have a different structure going on over here. It's not about affordability. It's about the way that we structured our schemes to try and help the economy as best we felt we could get through this. And that final question there, Andy, was about effectively what's going to happen going forward. I've already indicated that we will be extending our key support schemes, and by that, the Treasury key support schemes, which is salary support and the Social Security support. And what I think the view is, and we're working very closely with our colleagues in DfE, in the Department for Enterprise, is that we start to develop more specific sector support schemes for those areas that are most affected. And I appreciate there's thousands of businesses out there that are impacted to varying degrees. Obviously, across the community, people are impacted to varying degrees. And we're going to have to find, the best way forward to try and give as many people as possible the opportunities to push forward, but accepting, of course, this is not a perfect situation for us. This isn't just going to come to an end. There's going to be a long period of a business instability, if you like. The economic outlook projections for the globe are quite serious in terms of the estimates for GDP and consumption forecasts, and clearly you would expect that to reflect somewhat in the local economy as well. So it's going to be tough going, but we're going to have to act. We can't just keep the whole support mechanisms going forever. We're going to have to refine them and try and bring in some more specific support across sectors rather than necessarily targeting it at individual businesses for, the next 12 months.
Okay. Harry, hello. You're with the Treasury Minister.
Good afternoon, Mr. Cannon. Can I first of all begin by saying what an excellent job the government are doing, in my opinion, with the coronavirus crisis. But my question is about credit card facilities and why so few providers offer them on the Isle of Man.
Well, thank you, Harry. We have been very conscious of this for a few years now, that credit card companies have slowly but surely decreased their offering over here. Some have withdrawn completely. It is a matter that we continue to examine. People can still get credit card facilities, although I accept that it is incredibly tough. This is a matter really that DfE have been examining, Department for Enterprise have been taking a close look at. We don't think there's any good reason why card companies can't continue to offer in the Isle of Man. There certainly seemed to be some confusion around the legislation and the ability of these card companies to effectively recover debts or recover bad debts. And we think, therefore, that a lot of them have withdrawn on a cost basis. But it is a matter that we continue to work closely with the banking community on. And I don't think it's a situation where there's no credit card facilities, certainly. I mean, I still have a credit card. I've had it for a long time. There's never been any question of that card being withdrawn. So, but we will continue to look at it and examine it, and thank you for your point on that.
What's your particular issue with credit cards, Harry?
Well, right, okay. Well, first of all, I have two credit cards, one with MBNA, who refused to increase my credit limit because they no longer issue credit cards on the Isle of Man. I then made further investigations with my with Isle of Man Bank, and they have a convoluted system that you have to go through NatWest, and it's extremely difficult to access a credit card. And to cut a long story short, the only other provider, as far as I'm aware, is HSBC, with whom I now have a credit card.
Okay, all right, Harry, we'll leave it there. Thanks for raising that point. A note that came in, Mr. Cannon, with hindsight, the Isle of Man steam packet decision was inspired. And given that airlines will never be cheaper, is now the time to look at securing our own air service?
Thank you very much. Having our own shipping company at this particular time, at this particular crisis, obviously is invaluable. It would have been a very difficult situation for us were this crisis to have come and for us not to have had control of the shipping lanes and the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company. We have got a lot to do to examine what the future is going to look like from the airline industry. I think the Minister for Enterprise highlighted this in the press conference last night. We can clearly see there is a significant global impact, that a lot of the airline businesses appear to be in serious trouble. We definitely need to retain our air links. We do have a skeleton service operating at present. You know, it's not for me at the moment to determine whether or not the open skies policy would change, but I think it's fair to say that we are going to carefully examine what the future looks like in terms of air support for the island and whether or not the island may need to take a more interventionist route in the short to medium term. But it's far too early for me to make any definitive statements other than the fact that, like everything else on the back of this crisis, we're going to have to look very carefully at the open skies policy and what, and indeed what service we're actually left with or have in the coming months. And of course, much of that also will be dependent on how and to what extent we open our borders.
This is the Isle of Man talking, the man in line.
Treasury Minister Afra Cannon live on the air. Text 166 177, email studio at manxradio.com. You can give us a call on 66 13 68. Liz is with us. Liz, you were the Treasury Minister.
Great. I'm trying to pay the government money. I want to pay my rates. Now, normally I go down to Ridgeway Street and just nip in. We've got a nice big counter and glass partition. But now it's closed, so I've got no options but to go to the bank and open a bank account with a direct debit. I'm not supposed to leave the house for 3 months, as I'm over 70 and I have a compromised immune system. So how do we figure that one out? I don't have computer or internet or smartphone.
Okay, Mr. Cannon.
Liz. So do you have a bank card at all?
I have a bank card, but you can't do a direct debit from that bank card.
No, but can you just pay it off the card by over the phone?
No. Well, to whom?
Well, we would take the call. I think the best thing, Liz, is to call us, actually. If that's possible, you can call Treasury direct, and let me just see if I can find the best number for you. Okay,
that would help.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Great that you're trying to pay some money. We really do need people to carry on paying if they can, both with rates, bills, and any statutory payments. It's really important that as part of the...
I usually wait till the last minute in June, but because of the crisis, I thought, right, I'll get in right away because they're obviously going to need the money. You know, you haven't got a bottomless pot.
No, you're right, Liz. Fantastic. I'll tell you what, Andy, I will get that information before the end of the programme.
OK, well, we've got Liz's telephone number. Liz, thanks for that. It's not often that somebody volunteers to give the government money, but there's Liz, and thank you for that civic spirit. Mr Cannon, how many people are the government supporting at the moment? Do you have records?
Significant amounts now of people. I mean, obviously, government has its own, you know, the public sector itself. There's 9,500 people on the payroll there. We've got, so far, our estimate is we're supporting 11,000, just over 11,000 people on the salary support scheme in terms of the numbers of employees that are being declared by the employers who are applying. 2,000 people, just under 2,000 on the MIRA scheme, 1,347 on job seekers allowance. So, you know, at the moment, we've got some just over 14,000 people effectively on the island that, in one way or another, are now being supported from the, you know, by the taxpayer, from government funds. Obviously, that 14,000, you add on the government public sector payroll, 9,500, so 25,000. People, you know, they're huge numbers, Andy. Clearly, some of those will start to reduce as we start to get sectors back to work. But, you know, you can only sustain that kind of level for a period of time. We are well in control of our finances. I think we're operating to the level, possibly just under the level that we expected at the moment. But clearly, in the long term, those kind of numbers are not sustainable. So we do need to move proactively into the next phase, as outlined by the government in the medium-term strategy.
How much is this costing per month?
Well, I mean, we've got estimates, the actual figures are changing. But just to give you a sort of overview, you know, we're expecting that the salary support scheme over the three-month period, and it's probably better to declare it over the three-month period, could be up to £30 million. The social security and welfare benefit system could be as much as coming up to £7 million. The business support scheme, we expect to probably get up to £10 million in that period, plus the bank support that's being offered. And of course, we're also deferring offering to defer where necessary some of the statutory payments that companies and indeed individuals have to pay. But in terms of those basic core pillar schemes, if you like, that is £50 million that I've just outlined in those, you know, basic schemes alone over the three-month period. As I said, we're extending those now into for a further 12 weeks. So you can see it's significant. And of course, the other side of the coin, and we need more clarity on that, is the reduction in government revenue from income sources.
OK, Neil, you're live on the air with the Treasury Minister.
Good afternoon. I'm in a bit of a predicament at the moment. I'm in the process of relocating to the Isle of Man. Was over just before the border shut at the house I own in Douglas. Since then, I felt I haven't been able to return, obviously, because of the issues. I'm just wondering now, with the slight reduction in lockdown, whether there is a mechanism where I can come back and visit my wife and my dependent stepchild without having to go into the hotel for 14 days whilst I try and then work at home.
Okay, Neil, thank you very much. I think the Chief Minister has already indicated that the government is likely to move the position on relocation from quarantine to self-isolation. That has yet to be confirmed. I think the Chief Minister has committed to clarifying that position this week, and I would expect the Chief Minister to make that announcement in the next couple of days at the press conference. But yes, I mean, I think it's fair to say the Chief Minister already indicated that quarantine would be coming to an end and that we would be moving to a position where those coming into the island would be generally be expected to self-isolate at home. And just my advice is just listen carefully to the press conferences in the next couple of days. And indeed, accompanying that will be the formal press release anyway.
OK, Neil, we'll see you soon.
OK, thanks very much.
All right, good to talk to you. And here's Fiona with us. Hello, Fiona.
Hello, good morning. My concern is about whether the borders are kept closed for too long, causing a destructive effect on business and the economy and possibly people's quality of life in terms of travel. I say this particularly because by my calculations, the Isle of Man's number of incidents of cases per capita is significantly higher than that compared to the UK per capita. And I wonder if the government and Alf Cannon are aware that we have a lot of cases or people who've had COVID, and therefore the rationale of keeping people out when they might actually be more likely to catch it here, and this paranoia about incoming infection.
What's your view, Fiona?
It's already high. So my question is, I'm concerned that they are too tight if they're proposing to keep the borders closed till next year, and it will be detrimental to business and the economy.
Okay, well, thank you, Fiona. First of all, I mean, those figures that people are using, you know, need to be treated with a bit of caution because, you know, cases per capita, for example, does not necessarily always reflect against the amount of testing that might be going on or the systems in place for that, and also the way that the records are actually being kept. And there has been some differential from country to country basis. But moving to the broader issue of the borders, you know, the government has set out its indicative plan around the phases, and the borders are the last phase six, if you like, of that plan, the last point of that plan, where we're saying actually if the borders are open, then effectively we are back to normal. I think most of us accept, realistically, we cannot keep the borders closed in the way that we are forever. There's a number of interdependent factors on that. The fact that, for example, we have thousands of university students. Now, I don't know when the universities are going to open up, if they're going to open up in September, but clearly there's huge numbers of young men and women who will want to go off and further their education, for example. You know, business, irrespective of the fact that a lot of businesses now, international businesses, are operating digitally, there will still be the requirement for people to go for business travel. And, of course, our own residents as well will need to start being able to move around. So practically, there's a huge number of issues around that. I think the broad point is we recognize that. I think that's why the medium-term plan has been designed to acknowledge the fact that we are living with this virus, that we have to manage our way through that. And clearly, you know, as we get through the phases, start to get back to resurrecting some of these businesses from their current status in lockdown or shutdown, the borders will increasingly, and border management will be increasingly a significant part of that. That will be a developing situation. But I don't think there's any realistic proposition that we're just going to have our borders closed until such time as a vaccine is established.
Have you any idea, Mr. Cannon, when the borders will reopen? Are there any projected scenarios within government?
Well, the borders remain closed to non-residents. That is the key message, apart from key workers. And we are, you know, bringing returning residents back, and there are, through application, the ability of our residents to be able to leave the island in certain circumstances, and more importantly, to be able to come back. My advice to anybody who feels they need to leave the island would be to contact the Cabinet Office. There is a helpline number that's available, and I would make the inquiry as to the, you know, and give the reason for that trip and make the application if it is necessary. But, you know, as we move forward, increasingly border management, how we treat people coming into the island, how we ensure that, we contain and minimize the risk from that will be a key part of government's operational planning.
Okay, Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon is with us.
The Man in Line, daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. Broadcast on Manx Radio from midday till 1, Monday to Friday.
16 minutes to the hour. If you want to get in touch with Mr. Cannon,
the Nation Station.
You better hurry up.
Manx Radio. Love local, love the island.
Island Tyres and Exhausts want to say thank you to all you essential workers on the island. We're offering you discounts on our services, along with offering absolutely everyone free call-outs with our mobile tyre fitting units. Call Island Tyres and Exhausts on 613322.
Strang and Ballacamine stores are offering a delivery service throughout Douglas, Onchan, Moraun and Santon. If we don't stock it, we can get it. Message us on Facebook or call 852274 or 629241.
At Bond Fabrics, we're not just a fabric shop. As well as curtains and upholstery and dress and costume fabrics, we've knitting and crocheting wools. Made to measure curtain and blind service, plus poles and tracks. Visit Howard Street, Douglas, call 611-856 or see bondfabrics.im.
Love local, love the island.
Care to play? Then play to care with the Hospice Lottery. We still need your help so we can continue to be here for those who need us now and in the future. Playing the Hospice Lottery costs just £5 a month with the chance of winning £1,000. So liven up your lockdown and help us to continue making a life-changing difference. Visit hospice.org.im/lottery and sign up now. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be 16 or over.
Man Waste Recycling. Man Waste Recycling. 855-454.
We can all do our bit to help the environment. Here at Man Waste Recycling, we tailor our services to individual businesses by providing recycling solutions for cardboard, paper, UPVC, plastics, cans, cartons and more. We'll advise you on how your business can recycle so you can help make our island even more environmentally friendly.
Man Waste Recycling, call today.
Even though our high streets are quieter, Isle of Man Bank are continuing to help you look after your money.
Our mobile app and online banking service are still a secure, easy way to do your everyday banking at home, day or night.
You can check your balance, pay bills, transfer money and more.
Search Isle of Man Bank on your App Store or register for online banking at iombank.com.
Thank you for staying at home and banking safely. Eligibility criteria apply.
What's too hot in summer and too cold in winter? Your conservatory. Well now, Phoenix Windows can convert your conservatory roof with a solid, lightweight, insulated roof to turn your conservatory into a room you can comfortably use all year round. Phoenix Windows, for free estimates, free surveys, bespoke made-to-measure windows, guaranteed work, and all-island coverage. For your free, no-obligation quotation, call 816628 or visit phoenixwindows-iom.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint. Furnished by Magic Carpets.
With Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon, and Ken is with us. Hello, Ken.
Afternoon, gentlemen. I, like a few other people, didn't realise you had to register with income tax if you were self-employed, because I just put my extra earnings on the income tax form, and I'm below the annual limit for Class 2. And also with the UK fellow construction. Of course, we pay less tax here. There's a lower tax rate and national insurance is lower. Isn't that correct, Minister?
Sorry, Ken, can you just... I mean, clearly the tax, the broad tax rate is lower, but what was your specific question to me?
Self-employment. I didn't realise that you had to let the income tax people know that you were self-employed.
Well, effectively, I think that is determined as part of the way that you structure your tax affairs. But I will make sure that going forward, I think there's a lot to pick up on here in terms of clarity around what is potentially quite complex. And I think one of the things is that I think that's come out of this is that people haven't really paid a huge amount of attention in a lot of circumstances to their specific status. And we do need to move forward when we do move forward by ensuring that everybody recognizes the position that they have adopted with themselves and their potential then accessibility or otherwise of government support which exists within the national insurance framework.
Okay. All right, Ken, thanks for that. Message in, a question in here for the Treasury Minister. You were very much involved in the Jonathan Michael report into reforming the NHS. Will the NHS be reformed after coronavirus?
Well, I think to a certain degree, Andy, the NHS has found potentially in some respects a new way of operating within itself. But we intend to carry on with our plans for the implementation of the Sir Jonathan Michael report. You know, there was doesn't necessarily mean, you know, because of a crisis that the situation has changed. There were a number of areas that we felt we could improve. We needed to understand how much we were spending on health, how relevant that was, you know, what we needed to do to move to a best-in-class health system. I think a lot of what is outlined in Sir Jonathan Michael's report is still extremely relevant, and we certainly intend to continue with that. And I think actually this crisis will help shape, I think, a better health service under that that framework, than rather than just revert back to normal and find ourselves back in the same sort of situation with the NHS in 10 years' time. And may I say, obviously, take this opportunity to say across the NHS how impressed I have been with, and I'm sure we all are, with the way that they've handled this crisis. I can tell you, you know, sitting in the sort of heartbeat, if you like, in terms of receiving the advice, watching people deal with the situation on the ground, it's been incredibly impressive. And of course, we all acknowledge and value the way that doctors, nurses, care workers, hospital assistants, porters have gone about handling themselves and conducting themselves through this. So actually, I think we'll be in a better position to take forward and improve Sir Jonathan Michael plan.
OK, we're just about out of time, Minister, but quite a few questions came in on the text and email saying, how long will it take to refill the coffers when all this is finished?
I'm not sure, Andy, is the answer. What I will say is that we will deliver an interim budget statement in July. We may need to deliver an in-depth budget later this year. The primary focus will be to put in place an economic recovery plan. You know, we've done incredibly well, actually, in the last 4 years. We were in a stable and strong position going into this. We just negotiated our FERSA agreement. As you know, we'd got a windfall effectively out of that, or a small windfall. Clearly, the situation has changed significantly. We're going to be measured and balanced in terms of getting back on our feet. There's a number of factors to consider. We'll have, and we are putting together an economic plan, trying to understand where our priorities lie. So, you know, I've always been amazed at this island's resilience and ability to bounce back. I'm confident that we will be able to not only get through this, but get ourselves back into a strong position in the next couple of years.
Teamwork and morale are always very important, Minister. How do you feel the island shapes up on morale and teamwork?
I think the island has done a magnificent job so far. You know, it's almost in some ways, though, the easy part in some respects has been the shutdown. It's going to be much harder and much more difficult, you know, as we come out of this. And quite rightly, you know, the strategy is about emerging from this. This is not an exit strategy. Coronavirus is with us, unfortunately, Andy. There doesn't seem to be, and possibly some talk of a vaccine before Christmas, but reality is this virus is around us. We've got to learn to manage it, control it, and coexist with it moving forward. So we're going to have to draw on all the sort of great core values on this island, which I think have been brought to the fore in recent weeks: determination, hard work, focus, and integrity. And I think those kind of core values, which really run deep across the people in this island, will be needed now moving forward. But I'm confident that if you base our on what we've achieved in the last 6 weeks and the way that people have gone about it and supported each other as being a platform for the future, then I think we can be confident that those values will hold strong going forward, and we will come out of this in many ways with a lot of asset and strength and recognition of our ability and the strength of our communities.
In 16 months' time, there's a Keys general election, and of course, Aaron Michael will be there. Will you be standing for Keys?
Andy, I am so busy and focused trying to get this right and do the very best that I can. The last thing on my mind or anybody's mind at the moment is election. So we'll deal with that in about 15 months' time.
Okay. Thanks for being with us today, Treasury Minister, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Andy.
That's it for The Man in Line today. We've been live with Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon, MHK. If you're an Aaron Michael constituent, you'll know August of next year whether or not he's going to be on the ballot paper. This time next week, our Man in Line guest will be Health and Social Care Minister David Ashford on The Man in Line this time next week. Thanks to studio producer Howard Kane, and thanks to the many, many people we couldn't quite fit in. Man in Line's back tomorrow at midday.